Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Saturn Shine says this is a good topic tonight. Yeah, I want to talk a little more about this woman interview between Taylor Lawrence and Libs of TikTok, because it makes me think of what we discussed in the Patreon private hangout with Fadam. He came with the idea of the woke will be put away, that this is where we're headed. Basically, we will develop a form of centrism that is just rooted in anti-wokeness, but not further. And for that, the elites will need people who are willing to position themselves at the center, center-right, the Libs of TikTok of this world, the kind of MAGA crowd that is soft, the non-hard right-wingers, basically, and the Brett Weinstein, maybe, of this world, a kind of association against the woke for the woke to be put away. And whatever they use in terms of a method to get there, it will be a form of controlled opposition that is put in place, a form of, all right, we define you by the negative rather than the positive. We took you in, we elevate you as leaders of thought, but because you opposed something, not because you believe in something, which is very different, because it will lead to basically grifters being put forward the same way they were starting to be put forward. And in 2016, it was very fashionable to grift the alt-right. And you saw so many weak people just trying to surf on that wave and dissociating from it on the first occasion. And I believe we may be seeing a second generation of this rising with Libs of TikTok. Because here, Libs of TikTok is getting interviewed by Taylor Lawrence, who is, and then I was struck by someone raising that theory on Twitter. Hey, it's true that Taylor Lawrence was supposed to be the journalist who doxed Libs of TikTok. Under no circumstance would I, of course, you can't dox me because I'm already a public guy with my true name. But if I was an anonymous person and you were to be a journalist of the New York Times that doxes me, there is no circumstance under which I would make an interview with you. There is only, in fact, one circumstance in which I may be interested, which is if I have the impression that we will get a moment alone where I have the occasion to chop your head, wrap your body in plastic, and bury you in a place where I can never be held accountable for the murder. And it would be clean. But if that doesn't happen, I don't want to meet someone who doxed me. And yet, here they are, you know, complaining against each other, having an apparent debate at a coffee table. But to what extent is there true opposition between Taylor Lawrence of the New York Times and Libs of TikTok? To what extent do they represent truly different pillars of thought? Well, they disagree on the particular way to educate children. Okay, we should show anal sex at this age. No, we shouldn't. But in the end, we have two people who will be useful to the elites one way or another. Taylor Lawrence is useful by being the usual, traditional puppet of the system. And Libs of TikTok is just a second degree puppet of the system that may become interesting when the left decides to put the woke away and to have these centrist voices who say, oh yeah, we're all for public health care, support of Israel, big state. We just had an issue with trans people just fucking our children in the ass at 6 years old. Basically, that is it. And so we have a controlled opposition being slowly seeped in here. And I don't mean by controlled opposition the usual term of controlled opposition, which means someone who is your who is an apparent political enemy, but is truly an ally, and who is put in position to absorb the votes of someone of the right, let's say. It could be something like this that happens. But what we have here is controlled opposition, perhaps of an even more subtle degree, where I don't know to which extent these two women are truly at each other, or whether we're looking at K-Fab, as someone suggested on the regular chat. It may very well be K-Fabe. Israeli settlers armed with M16s and Glocks attacked the ADF. The settlers stole Palestinian land and half a million shekels worth of livestock. The farmers notified the police and they agreed to send a group of Israeli soldiers along with the Palestinians to help them reclaim their farm. So here you have the whole viciousness of the Jewish genocide of the Palestinians. The IDF comes in, bombards everything, make the conditions unlivable, so the civilians have to flee. Some can flee, and they flee. And the IDF is saying, oh, it's not a genocide. We're just doing a military operation here. You can get your land back at some point, of course. We're really just bombarding Hamas. And so now you have private citizens on the Israeli side who see this and they say, all right, let's go squat this farm. Now, this farm is ours. And hopefully the Palestinians that own it never come back. So you have private citizens here transforming this supposed military operation into an ethnic cleansing de facto. And yet you have the ability of the IDF to say, well, we didn't commit a genocide. We just fought Hamas and then, oh, okay, well, this settler took this farm. Well, it was a private decision. It's not us. So that way they have plausible deniability. But what's happening in the end is Palestinian farmers being deprived of their land. Mario Nafal reports an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force sets himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington. I will no longer be complicit in genocide. While on fire, he repeatedly yells, "Free Palestine, free Palestine." So some people on the American side can't take it anymore, can't participate to what has clearly been shown to be a genocide. NN says they've been ethnic cleansing the Palestinians for a long time. It's just more obvious this time. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been going on as early as the establishment of Israel and then the wars that went on in the 50s. Definitely, this is not a new situation, but it's been going up a notch. So this was inspired to me tonight by Sam Parker, who started with a theory. And Sam Parker was theorizing on this whole interaction here between Taylor Lawrence and Libs of TikTok. Anyone else think that Taylor Lawrence doxing of Chaya Ratchik, Libs of TikTok, might have been a stage setup? It really helped propel both her main Anon account and her personal account to stardom. She got tons of press and TV appearances off of it. Suspect as hell in hindsight, to be honest. And wow, that is an interesting theory. The idea that Libs of TikTok has never been offended truly by her doxing. That is an interesting idea. It's entirely possible in my view. You can see them hanging out at a cafe and it's almost like they belong there together. They could be friends. There could be a network of solidarity around Libs of TikTok that she was trusting with her identity. And perhaps her doxing is not so much a doxing, but somewhere in the continuum of self-doxing and also trying to surf on the wave of sympathy that comes if you can play the victim of a doxing. That is extremely interesting. So I stated, it's an interesting theory. This is a new generation of social media rage bait content, very similar to the Bobby Althoff white woman interviewing black rappers and creating fake, awkward misunderstanding during the interview just to prop up the virality of clips. It looks like a big setup, but do not pay attention to the man behind the curtain. There's a new trend that I felt suddenly the resemblance between the Libs of TikTok interview with Taylor Lawrence and this kind of viral content that has been pushed by an interviewer named Bobby Haltoff. This girl, look at the style, okay? And let me tell you, I will tell you in advance, this is all set up. It's a dialogue, it's comedy, but it looks awkward for real. And most people, I've been looking down this video, most idiots on Twitter, they look at this video and they're like, oh, this white annoying woman again. Oh my God, she's annoying. Oh my God, she's awkward. But this is her style of comedy, okay? So I'm telling you in advance, she's doing comedy here.
So what do you do for a living?
My life is like literally revolves around my kid. I work for him.
You work for him?
Yeah.
What's his job?
No, I'm saying like I go to work so he
can. Oh, I thought you meant you like work for him. Like, well, that's actually what you said. So of course I thought you meant that.
He's the purpose that I work. He's the reason why I work.
That's a better way to say it.
That's why I go to work. Is
well, you
him.
Don't, yeah, you don't work for your son.
My son. Mm-hmm. Inspires me to work.
That's great. That's exactly how, that's not how I meant, took it though.
No, but yeah. When I said that I work for him, that's what I meant.
I
physically get up and go to work for him.
That's what I thought you meant though.
I can't do that.
Why?
He's 11.
Yeah, but I don't know what rich people do. Maybe your kid's like already doing something. He has like a brand or something and you work for it.
I could see that. When you say it like that, cool. But in a normal world, parents don't work for their 11-year-old children.
You don't live in a normal world.
DK Shadow says she's playing the dumb white bitch. Yes, and there's a demand for this. And I'm wondering to what extent is the Libs of TikTok interview in that trend of virality here? Because when one of the most hilarious section of this interview was retweeted by Richard Spencer, and it made me think, wow, it's exactly like this. It looks like a false misunderstanding. Richard Spencer was tweeting about this clip, current state of the millennial left and right.
I'm curious kind of how you're thinking, you know, when you think about the way that you put out content and the way that you think about growing your media empire.
Here, this is a blowjob.
I'm curious kind of how you're thinking, you know, when you think about the way that you put out content and the way that you think about growing your media empire.
Here, this is a blowjob.
I'm looking at this and I'm like, it seems like it's the same type of rhythmic humor where the awkwardness of the exchange and the taking out of context makes it look like awkward, makes it look like something interesting and props up the virality of said clips. In the longer conversation, you can see where this segment stems from.
I think we should give kids porn in school, the images of the gay sex.
So I had I went to public school. And in public school, at least when I was growing up, we were absolutely given literature, you know, explaining sex, educating people.
You had pictures of like anal sex?
Oh, absolutely. And it actually talked about condom use.
What grade?
God, I mean, I don't remember, but certainly probably middle school.
Here you have the state Jewish position versus the private Jew school Jewish position. Rodi Lassid says, are they both Jewish? What are their opinions on Israel, each of them? Well, Taylor Lawrence is working for a Jewish outlet, New York Times. I don't know. She says she went to public school. Does she come from a Jewish family? I don't know. But Shaya Rashik is Jewish also. But here you have two very Jewish positions, basically. One is just a Jewish conservative, and one is the typical Jewish of public school positions.
I think that's when we had sex ed.
So you think like books like Gender Queer, This Book Is Gay, we should give that to kids in school?
I have not read those books, so I don't know. But I do think that it's important to educate kids about sexuality, if nothing else, because, you know.
And then you're going to have to educate them equally about all sexualities, because anything you do with the state will lead to claims of 14th Amendment violation. And now you find yourself, you started with the desire of giving information to kids about sexuality, and you are already down the slope just from the logical consequences of the 14th Amendment. You're down the slope of showing them fisting because, well, you're not going to discriminate against people who like fisting, right? So because the state is locked in a position of desiring equality in its treatment at all time, you cannot just say, I just want them to have sex education. It's going to come with a package. It's going to come with a slippery slope. The question is whether you feel comfortable going down the whole slope, because there's no stopping halfway through the slope. But of course, these women, they have no idea what they're talking about. So the whole section of this clip, Taylor Lawrence will be like, I don't know. I haven't seen these, but I don't know. Let's listen to the experts. It's always what it boils down to when they have nothing to say. These leftists are looking for an expert to grab.
You know, I have spoken to women that were abused sexually when they were young, very young. And one thing that they've told me is that they wish that they had the language to talk about it, and they weren't educated. They grew up in I only know two that I've spoken to about this, but they've grown up in sort of societies where they weren't very educated about sex ed. They didn't receive sex ed in class. They went to a Catholic school or other types of schooling. And so I do think it's really important for kids to understand sex, because as we all know, a lot of teenagers can be sexually active. And I think sex education is important to promote, you know, healthy attitudes,
But do you have a mechanism to give reasonable biological understanding of sex to children without doing homosexual propaganda? No, you don't. Because you're an agent of the state if you're in public school, and you have to abide by equality of treatment. And there's all these constitutions and rules above you, where if you talk about any sort of sex, you're gonna have to talk about gay sex, and then you're down the line of LGBT propaganda. So might as well not teach children sex if you're forced down the line to teach them bad forms of sex.
Understandings of sex, I mean, these are human bodies. You can't just expect to send kids off at 18 with absolutely no sex ed and then...
Well, I mean, arguably, this is what we were doing 100 years ago, and there were less STDs, there was more marriage, there was more loyalty within the couple, and people were living more fulfilling family lives. So, yes, you can. Yes, you can say, hey, God made you that way, and, you know, whatever God has prepared for you, good luck. And honestly, it puts the children, it puts the rising young adults into a position where they have to make their decisions wisely. And, you know, if you're not going to be fully educated about condoms and birth control pills and all this stuff, you're going to have to be serious about who do I have sex with. Might as well have sex with only one man that I fully trust, because the minute you allow the education on all these contraceptives, you are messing up decision-making and the perception of risks. The minute you find a cure for HIV, suddenly you have more degeneracy in society because, oh, well, I don't even have to care about getting HIV anymore. That is the problem of science and education the more you know, sometimes the more you destroy yourself.
Think that they can function in the world.
So we should give kids like pictures of gay sex in middle school. And
you have to point out here that Libs of TikTok doesn't have much solid arguments on her side. You can see that she's not trained at all for a public conversation. So you think that we should show them images of gay sex? I don't think so. I think we shouldn't show them images of gay sex. And there's no justification. It makes me think of this Andrew Wilson appearance where he said, just admit it, you don't have an argument. It just gives you the ick. Like, he was saying that to a girl who was arguing against old males going with young females. And he was saying, you don't have an argument against it. The female is consenting. The old male is consenting. You're just getting the ick. So just say it. Libs of TikTok here is making a fully I'm getting the ick argument. It's not valuable because, okay, that's your preference. But how do you justify your preference? How would you convince someone who doesn't have that preference to side with you? You need an argument for this.
Actually,
I guess I'm wondering what you consider that. I think.
Do you want to see a picture?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, are you talking about the ones that you've posted on your Twitter account?
Yeah.
I guess those don't look like what I received when I did sex ed, but I think sex ed is important because it actually helps.
So you didn't have those types of things when you were in school?
Oh no, we had sex ed.
I'm saying the images I posted on my Twitter.
Did you, when you had sex ed in school, did you not get books with graphic
with
imagery?
Pictures of gay sex?
I remember, I don't.
New guy says, this is killing me, I'm out. That was my reaction yesterday. This is why I said, I'm not watching this interview. And I still haven't watched it in full because it's only released in clips. But I think it's still worth it to go through the clip to see the absolute emptiness that's coming. Because when I say control the position, eventually this control the position will be what's elevated as our thought leader. And so here's a preview of your future, new guy. You better be able to go through it because it's going to be this for the next 20 years if Fadam's prediction is correct.
I don't remember how old you are, but I grew up in the 90s when HIV and AIDS was a big thing, and we certainly learned about gay sex in school.
So those pictures I posted on my Twitter, you had graphics like that?
I actually don't know. I don't remember, to be honest. But
no, I don't remember being a kid of the 90s. I was in sex education stuff. I don't remember any graphic pictures. I don't remember any discussion of anal sex, blowjobs, none of this. No graphic picture. If there was a picture to be had, it was pictures of people under covers. And we wouldn't see the action of sex in the book. And the mentions of gay sex were very secondary when you compare them to today's guidelines.
I do think that it's really important to
educate. Knowing those pictures, you seem to know very well what
those
pictures are.
I don't.
You kept referencing that.
Well, I've seen you post things,
but
I don't
pull
know.
It up.
But I think, I guess I feel...
Because we need to put this into context.
Yeah. Well, we won't know the context, of course, because we don't know the context of how those things are being taught.
Oh, so we could give kids, like, pictures of gay sex as long as it's in the proper context?
I don't know. I mean, it's up to the educator to determine.
There's no proper context because the picture itself is the propaganda. The picture itself, whether you intend some other communicative intent behind it, what that picture is saying is, hey, it could be you. You could be doing gay sex. And that you have no control over. That's just how the human mind works. Show something and put an X on it and say, don't do this. There's going to be a fraction of the population that wants to do it suddenly.
Charmin, right? I don't know. I guess I'm kind of curious why you sort of focus so much about the LGBT. You keep mentioning gay sex, but you don't mention straight sex. Why is there such a focus on the LGBTQ world?
Oh, I don't want pictures of sex in school. Any pictures.
So you don't think children should receive any sort of sexual education, straight or gay?
I said I don't want pictures.
And here you have the The reason I'm uncomfortable as to have libs of TikTok be a representant of the opposition to the left, it's that ultimately what you have here is someone who's surfing on anti-LGBT bigotry of some sort, but who's doing so on the credentials of just pure conservatism around sex, and not so much understanding that there is a propaganda element here, that there is a moral question here, which is, should we train our next generations to be more gay? And the answer is we shouldn't, of course. But see, because of our need to display equality at all times, Libs of TikTok is not a fit representative of right-wing thinking, because she is not in a position to even say, hey, I take issue with gay sex in these books. She's saying it because she wants to gatekeep and attract the audience that's opposed to it. But in reality, when you inspect her deeply, she's against sex to children overall. So she's just a conservative around the subject of sex when it comes to children. That is passing beside the track of the current attack on Western civilization, which is a demographic anti-natalist attack. The picture of gay sex in the books are not there to introduce the idea of sex to children. They're there to put them on a route that is unproductive and unreproductive, on a route of non-heterosexuality.
Pictures of sex in school.
But you think that they should receive picture-free sex education?
I know, I think we discussed this earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. Here, this is
a blue dome. What? I don't know what book this is from.
Gender queer.
Okay.
So should this picture of a blue doll be in elementary schools?
I've never seen a book like that in elementary schools, but I have no idea.
It has been.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about...
So should it be in elementary schools?
I have no idea the context. I have no idea
the context. So in what context should it... Is it okay?
I have absolutely no idea. I would not... I don't know, Kai. I haven't seen the rest of that book. I don't know what's in there.
But there is a context that it would be okay to give kids pictures like that of gay sex, anal sex,
I guess sex pictures in school? I don't know. Because you know who I would defer to on that? Just... because neither of us are sex educators, I would defer that question to a qualified professional, a sex educator, and say, hey.
The sex educator are Marxist trained to undermine reproduction in the white race, basically. It's literally their goal. They're fed Marxist anti-white talking points throughout their college education. Forget it. If you trust any expert, it's going to be whatever is the route to destroy the white family, period. That is what experts will converge to, whether they tell you or not. There's two kinds of experts. There's those that will be honest about it and those that won't. But they will all converge toward this. So here she is. You know, we are in a discussion and she's already deferring to an expert that doesn't exist. There must be experts out there. Please let me grab some expert here. She has imaginary experts who will suddenly know the truth around this. But the truth is inaccessible to expertise in this case, because the truth is moral. An expert will not consider that turning children gay is a bad thing. And so an expert of this domain is not fit to make that decision. Because if you ask that expert, is it a bad thing if you turned a child gay? He's going to say, no, it's a good thing, or it's a neutral thing. And so the only experts that have a legitimate say on this moral question are those who have skin in the game on the outcomes of the child, which is the child himself and his parents, period.
You're an expert.
Before you start trusting experts, ask yourself, What would the expert be an expert in? What will be the criteria by which the expert will have measured his expertise? Knowledge? Knowledge of what? Knowledge of whether the child becomes gay or not, becomes hetero or not? Will he have measured this? will he have considered a child becoming gay as a failure, or will he have been bound by his expertise to say that is just how it is? He will have been bound to say this. He will have been bound to find morally okay things that you wouldn't be morally okay with. So experts are of no value here.
Treated tons, you know, you've educated tons of people.
And here she does an interesting Freudian slip. When she says she would defer to expert educators, she says you would have treated tons of children.
Professional, a sex educator, and say, hey, you're an expert. You've treated tons, you know, you've educated tons of people.
And she immediately recovers her Freudian slip and she says, you've educated tons. There is a fundamental sickness in the female, liberal female mind today, which is to see a non-brainwashed child as needing treatment. She sees a child who is not educated around sex the way she or the way the experts want them to be educated. She sees it as needing treatment. And she talks of a sex educator and she can't help it but say, you know, these good sex educators, they have treated. So she sees the intervention of sex educator as a treatment onto society, treatment of a sickness, the sickness of not knowing about anal sex when you're 7 years old. With this kind of twisted cognition, you can reach any conclusion. Doubting Thomas says, JF, sexual degeneracy of the left could be a lot worse than it is. For example, legality of sex in public or much worse. However, there are still some levels of puritanism on the left, even the far left, that keeps society from spiraling. Why is that? Oh, well, I don't think that the degeneracy of the left is degeneracy for the sake of it. I don't think they're pursuing the maximal level of degeneracy. I think it's very degeneracy with an intended purpose. The fight of the left currently is centered around the traditional family structure and mostly the father as an authority figure, because they know that as long as there are fathers, as long as there is the heterosexual family, they will have to keep flows of migrants to even keep in power against the flow of babies that are born from heterosexual families in the US, that even they are afraid of that much immigration. It's like, can you imagine you would need to constantly replace the LGBT community by waves of LGBT migrants? Because they're not getting children, and their urban lifestyles in town are not productive of children. So I don't believe that they're looking for maximal degeneracy at all times. If not, then yes, we would see them, protest for sex on the streets. And just you would walk to the McDonald's in the city and you would see literally orgies on the side of the street. That is not what the left is about. The left is about introducing, projecting degeneracy. And they are catching their own sickness to some extent. Because when you start making propaganda to destroy the family, the first victim of this propaganda will end up being your own family. But the left is very purpose-built around, we will use I think that they must know it either to some kind of instinctive level, or maybe in fact some of them are explicitly knowing it. But they want to use degeneracy as a tool. It's not the end in and of itself. They just turn out to have degenerate minds naturally, and they want to project the most they can. And the only protection against this that is solid is really strong moral pillars against degeneracy. And typically it emerges from a religious mind or a kind of autistic mind like mine who can derive his own interest even without a religious belief.
people. You're a full-time sex educator. You've really studied this. What are the appropriate boundaries? I don't think that myself as a journalist or a media personality, I don't think I'm the right one to make that decision. And I guess I'm wondering...
Well, then shut the fuck up! Shut up!
Why I have seen sex educators say that they want these books in schools. So then you're okay with that?
I think I would want to talk to the sex educator and rely on whatever the sex educators say. Okay. I'm wondering...
The great delusion of the female. If we can talk about it, I'm sure there's a good reason. Now you're going to talk about it to an expert. The expert will say, blah, blah, blah. I've done these studies. I've concluded that this. And the sex educator will never address the main point, which is the child becoming more gay? And if so, is the gay lifestyle associated with measures that a parent would want to protect their child's with from? Like having less babies, having more STDs, having more diseases, living a shorter lifespan, living more depression and mental disorders. If you had a burger that gives you these five things, That burger would be the most illegal burger ever. It would be absolutely illegal. You would have to find it on the street, buy it at the park with cash. There would be not a single government letting you sell that burger. And yet, we're selling that burger in elementary schools. A burger that gives you STDs, desire to suicide, shorter lifespan, no babies, so sterilized. You're basically being sterilized. The ND Burger, says DK Shadow. Yes. You know, this pictures of them made me think, what do we have here? Do we have kayfabe? Because, okay, she's wearing the T-shirt of Taylor Lawrence crying. I don't remember in which context it was, but I remember there was a meme around this. So here you have a representation of journalistic jury and a representation of independent Twitter jury. And they are engaging in some form of kayfabe. And even some form of appropriation of the memes of further right. If you want to be convinced that this is the center trying to take over the teams of the far right, look at what Libs of TikTok says. Always the eyes, every single time. Every single time is a very specific meme. And she makes a close-up of the eyes of Taylor Lawrence. And Taylor Lawrence is wearing her COVID mask from 2019. It's almost too much. It's almost when you see the wrestler coming with his big muscles, but he's got an extra clothing element that's like, okay, now I had doubt, but now I get it. Wrestling is fake. You know what? When the kayfabe goes a little too far and you're like, okay, I'm looking at comedy here. Is it possible that the COVID mask here gives it away? Gives away the comedy that we're looking at here? If not this COVID mask, certainly the Libs of TikTok use of the sentence every single time. It's very weird to see a Jew using the every single time meme against a representative of journalistic Jewry. It's an appropriation here, what's happening. Cultural appropriation of the far right. She's trying to redirect the meaning of every single time to be more general than it is. Every single time is a meme when you discover that someone is Jewish and you're like, holy shit, are they all Jewish? Because every time I Google it, they always are Jewish. But here she reuses it in a very different manner because that's not what she means, clearly. So you have an attack here onto the far right that is formed by an alliance of the far left and the center. Very interesting, especially in light of what Fadam was discussing, that we are headed toward a pushing away of the woke. So we are headed for a recentralization of the political opposition, the political dichotomy, back to a 90s level where Bill Clinton, George Bush, center-left, center-right, center-center, they are trying to centrify the political discourse. Little joke here where she brought face masks, but she's doing it as a joke. She's wearing the mask for real.
My mom sends regards. I believe you met when you came up to my house.
Oh. And now she says, my mom saw you because you came to my house. But apparently Taylor Lawrence is hanging around the house of Libs of TikTok. And now Libs of TikTok is implying that Taylor Lawrence would have kind of been obsessing about her or stalking her.
Oh, yeah. I saw her through the window. Yeah, yeah. How's she doing? Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm trying to get comments from you.
And she's saying, I'm trying to get comments from you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm wondering why you feel like you're qualified to be a sex educator when you have no background in that.
If you're not, and later she will recognize that she's not an authority in this. You cannot be complaining against the lack of authority of someone else if you don't even have that authority to discuss the subject yourself. In any case, my conclusion on this is we are headed toward very dark political times. There was an awakening in 2016, and I would say that in 2016, truly right-wing discourse emerged as victorious on the internet. And the surfers, the grifters, the center-rightists were exposed. And there were many of them, but we could see them. I don't know if we'll be able to see them forever. I think that they're taking over, and I think that there is a constellation of between the Elon Musk of this world, the Brett Weinstein, the Libs of TikTok, there is a generation of thinkers who don't have strong right-wing pillars, but yet will take the anti-woke position. And in the way the anti-woke in 2016, we would have called it anti-SJW. And we had the Sargon of Akkad doing it. We had a bunch of YouTubers who, and we told these YouTubers, you're not doing enough. You're not pushing it enough. Right-wing belief is more than this. Conservatism for real is not this. And I believe they're coming back. The Sargon of Akkads are knocking back at the door. And what I predict, if they succeed, it's going to be a cycle of the most boring politics ever. Prepare accordingly. Rodilacid says, if their only point of contention is trans rights, but agree on everything else, they are almost the same person. Exactly. The degree of opposition here, the reason I'm calling it controlled opposition is that their opposition concerns 0.001% of the ongoing population affairs. So there's no opposition here. Swing It says, JF, when I browse through Instagram, it's full of right-wing memes, completely viral, and even in normal videos, the top-voted comments are all based. Yes, for now, I would say the center hasn't taken back the reins of the internet, but we'll have to be on the watch. That's my point. Because you may very well have this fake opposition rising and acquiring a piece of the pie. And if Elon Musk is on the algorithm trying to push the balance toward this side, a rug pull is incoming. Yes, DK Shadow, a rug pull. Not a rug pull of tokens, of Bitcoin, but a rug pull of of the Overton window and who is elevated as a legitimate right-wing thinker. The new Satoshi emails, 120 pages detailing work on Bitcoin. We get massive insight into Satoshi Nakamoto. I'm shaking as I read these letters because we get to see the personality of Satoshi. Thanks for starting that topic on ASC. Your understanding of Bitcoin is spot on. Some of their responses were rather Neanderthal, although I guess they're so used to being anti-fiat money that anything short of gold isn't enough. So here they were interacting with a bunch of anti-fiat people, and they were kind of having the first interaction with a crowd that was strong on gold, not so strong. They didn't know about Bitcoin, but they were kind of exploring the possibility of an association with them. They concede that something is flammable, but argue that it will never burn because there will never be a spark. Once it's backed with cash, that might change. But I'd probably better refrain from mentioning that in public anymore until we're closer to ready to start. I think we'll get flooded with new buys and we need to get ready first. What we need most right now is website writing. My writing is not that great. I'm a much better coder. Maybe you could create the website on SourceForge, blah, blah, blah. And he's talking about servers and programming language. DK Shadow says, I believe Satoshi is one person more than ever. Oh, yeah, I've always been convinced that he's one person. It didn't look like an association. He had emails, he had accounts. I believe it's one person. 100,000 blocks generating nodes is a good ballpark, large-scale size to think about. Propagating a transaction across the whole network twice would consume a total of 2 cents of bandwidth at today's prices. In practice, many would be burning off excess allocated bandwidth or unlimited plans with one of the cheaper backbones. There could be millions of SPV clients. They only matter in how many transactions they generate. If they pay 1 or 2 cents transaction fees, they pay for themselves. I've coded it so you can pay any optional amount of transaction fees you want. When the incentive subsidy eventually tapers off, it may be necessary to put a market-determined transaction fee on your transactions to make sure nodes process them promptly. To think about what a really huge transaction load would look like, I look at the existing credit card network. I found some more estimates about how many transactions are online purchases. It's about 15 million transactions per day for the entire e-commerce load of the internet worldwide. At 1 KB per transaction, that would be 15 gigs of bandwidth for each block generating node per day, or about 2 DVD movies worth. Seems doable even with today's technology. Important to remember, even if Bitcoin caught on at dot-com rates of growth, it would still take years to become any substantial fraction of all transactions. I believe hardware has already recently become strong enough to handle large scale, but if there's any doubt about that, bandwidth speeds, prices, disk space, and computing power will be much greater by the time it's needed. Absolutely visionary here. And in a way, he was concerned with very transactional stuff that didn't came to be. Because if you're talking about replacing the whole credit card network, then yes, it's all very small transactions, a lot of load, a lot of bandwidth. That would have been 15 gigs for the whole blockchain every day. It's not what we've seen. What we've seen is the Bitcoin market is disciplining itself into a massive, like institutional, big money moves type of market. And really, the credit cards are left with the leftover market, the transactional, mini money transfers truly are. So it's fascinating to see that he had concerns that were so far in the future that even today we can say, oh, that is not even a concern yet today. And yet he was like, back then, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, he was there saying, yeah, you know, it's far in the future enough that for now it will do. Ironic if we end up having to choose between economic liberty and conservation. Unfortunately, proof of work is the only solution I've found to make P2P e-cash work without a trusted party. Even if I wasn't using it secondarily as a way to allocate the initial distribution of currency, proof of work is fundamental to coordinating the network and preventing double spending. If it did grow to consume significant energy, I think it would still be less wasteful than the labor and resource-intensive conventional banking activity that it would replace. The cost would be an order of magnitude less than the billions in banking fees that pay for all those brick-and-mortar buildings, skyscrapers, and junk mail credit card offers. Wow, Satoshi was... I feel like Satoshi was a brother of the internet because I've been making this argument so much. Like yesterday, I believe yesterday I was talking about how we should count the farts of the bank ladies as part of global emissions. If we truly want to compare traditional banking with Bitcoin, how many farts are they making per day? And how much CO2 is that for the global climate change? But here, Satoshi was totally in line with my arguments, and yet he was doing them 12 years before me. That's so fascinating to me. It's similar in that it uses digital signatures for coins, but different in the approach to privacy and preventing double spending. The recipient of a Bitcoin payment is able to check whether it is the first spend or not, and second spends are not accepted. There isn't an offline mode where double spenders are caught and shamed after the fact, because that would require participants to have identities. To protect privacy, key pairs are used only once, with a new one for every transaction. So here, interestingly, you have the vision of Satoshi was that you would never redeposit in the same address. A lot of people do it. But the vision of Satoshi was if you want a second deposit, you use a second address. Of course, he has led the network to be such that you can use a separate address for every deposit, or you can reuse the same address. That's so fascinating. In his view, you would generate a new public address every time you expect a deposit. But the reality is for people like me, for instance, I need to display my public address on my videos for donations. I can't control if I'm going to receive one donation or 10. And so if 10 of you use the same address, I don't get the chance to change the address every time. And so we end up having a use of Bitcoin that was outside of the bounds of what Satoshi was expecting, because he was truly seeing Bitcoin as you're going to expect the receipt. You're going to emit an invoice and someone's going to pay for that invoice and it's going to get in your account. Frog Eyes says, exactly. Plus, most electrical inefficiency is due to the grid / losses from transmitting power over long distances. So those corporate banking operations in the city consume far more power than the majority of BTC miners who typically operate at point of generation. Absolutely. There isn't an offline mode, blah, blah, blah. Of course, the biggest difference is the lack of a central server. That was the Achilles heel of Shomian systems. When the central company shut down, so did the currency. Also, in Bitcoin, is there a limited supply of money that must be managed, or is money created exactly at the moment of transaction? There is a limited supply of money. Circulation will be 21 million coins. Transaction only transfer ownership. Thank you for your questions. Swing It says, what's the point of getting a new address every time? The point is that if you do that, the people who are looking at the network from the outside, unless you spend those money into a single funneled transaction, the people looking at it from the outside will never know that it's in your wallet. You're the only one who knows that, oh yeah, I generated 5 different keys for my wallet. I receive in the first, I receive with the second, I receive with the third, the fourth, the fifth. The person on the outside doesn't know that these 5 addresses belong to the same wallet. They just know that there's some money in number 1, some money in number 2, some money in number 3. So it gives you a form of privacy where people don't exactly know how much Bitcoin you have because they don't know exactly how many addresses you have them across. Satoshi got burned out on Bitcoin. I know this sounds really retarded, but I still haven't been able to get the SourceForge login page to load, so I haven't been able to read it either. Hal is currently actively involved. He helped me a lot defending the design on the cryptography list and with initial testing when it was first released. He carried this torch years ago with his reusable proof of work. I'm not going to be much help right now either. Pretty busy with work and need a break from it after 18 months worth development. It would help if there was something for people to use it for. We need an application to bootstrap it. Any ideas? There are donors I can tap if we come up with something that needs funding, but they want to be anonymous, which makes it hard to actually do anything with it. Wow. Satoshi was busy with work. If only he knew that one Bitcoin would be worth today $52,000, his work wouldn't have mattered because there he was working for whatever. Maybe he was working for $100,000 a year. But can you imagine if he knew that those Bitcoins would be billions of dollars worth? It wouldn't have mattered that he had work, but he had worked and it was keeping him busy. So that's why he was trusting the replacement team to eventually advance the work. Offering currency to back Bitcoins would attract free buy seekers. So here it seems from these emails that Satoshi had the idea that eventually we should back Bitcoin with real money, which now seems absolutely ridiculous. That would be a massive error. Oh my God. You don't want to back Bitcoin with real money because the minute you do this, Bitcoin is now, it doesn't grow in value anymore. The reason Bitcoin is growing in value is that it's totally unrelated to real money. And in fact, Bitcoin is becoming the real money now. At first, it would mostly be seen as a way to get free money for your computer's idle time. Maybe pitch like help support the future of e-commerce and get a little money for your computer's spare cycles. As people cash in and actually get paid, word would spread exponentially. It might help to keep the minimum transaction size above an amount which a typical user would be able to accumulate with one computer, so that users have to trade with each other for someone to collect enough to cash in. Aggregators would set up shop to buy Bitcoins in smaller increment, which would add confidence in users' ability to sell Bitcoins if there are more available buyers than just you. I mean, this is so outdated, because in the end, it turned out that there's a whole massive market that is born out of the desire for Bitcoin. There are exchanges, and all of these details that Satoshi was worried about don't matter anymore. There's plenty of exchanges out there. they didn't have to make a specific Bitcoin exchange. All that they needed is to release the open source technology, and now the whole world is singing at the tune of the Bitcoin song. Wow, that is quite shocking for me to have this piece of Internet Archive now exposed publicly. Very moving to me to see these important moments are somewhat recorded. Elon Musk comments on the Gemini Google AI. Given that the Gemini AI will be at the heart of every Google product and YouTube, this is extremely alarming. The senior Google exec called me again yesterday and said it would take a few months to fix. Previously, he thought it would be faster. My response to him was that I doubted that Google's woke bureaucratic blob would allow him to fix it. Unless those who caused this are exited from Google, nothing will change, except to make the bias less obvious and more pernicious. By the way, kudos to Caitlin for posting that she would definitely prefer misgendering to nuclear apocalypse. Interesting that Elon is telling Google at this point, your bureaucracy is too woke. You're not even going to be able to fix the anti-whiteness of your AI. And that is true. I mean, Elon had success combating some degree of anti-whiteness. He hasn't even succeeded in full. But he had to fire 75% of the workforce for this. If Google keeps its workforce, it's going to be the same crap, and they're going to be, because the wokes, they have this mentality of revolutionaries. They'll be like, oh yeah, we'll do it. And they won't do it. So there's no other way than to fire the people. I mean, ultimately, it's a bunch of anti-white racists in your corporation. So fire them for anti-white racism. Fuck them. I don't know if you'll remember, but there was this bizarre titling of a Zero Hedge article saying that some politician was pulling out of Nikki Haley. And I was like, what kind of sexual reference is this? But today, AF Post has repeated the experiment to make a sexual allusion in his title. He says, cock pulls out of Nikki Haley after Trump creams her. After Trump creams her in South Carolina primary. And I said, okay, this is getting too far. I love these sexual innuendos, but at this point, it's getting way too far. But we did learn that Trump totally defeated Haley in her home state of South Carolina. Amazingly, I mean, at this point, this is necromancy, okay? She's staying in the race. This is necromancy. You are betting on the fact that Trump will die. This is the only way in which Nikki Haley succeeds here. So she's doing this dirty bet that she's going to lose the Democratic decision inside the Republican Party, but that somehow Trump will die. I mean, this is sick. This is sick. She should be banned. The chief of the Republican Party should come in and say, no, we're not wasting this money. Rodi Lacid says, or that he will be convicted and go to jail or removed from the ballot. Yeah, those are such dirty bets. I'm totally against it. As a last news item, Kid Rock. This is why Green Day sang, I don't want to be an American idiot.
I don't disagree with what Israel's doing. It's like, they should just go in there and be like, you know what? We want our hostages back. If we don't have them back, clock starts now in fucking 24 hours. We're going to start bombing motherfuckers and killing fucking civilians 30,000, 40,000 a fucking time. So you civilians better fucking pack up and fucking get these fucking motherfuckers and you go against Hamas. You fucking go against them. We're not playing fucking games with you. But that's the only thing people understand. This is what happened in Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Kid Rock is suggesting that we take civilians hostage and we say we're going to genocide 30,000 of you if you don't immediately go out there and fight Hamas for us. I mean, putting aside the illegality of this all, I mean, this is just cruel criminal behavior. It's like you are such a coward that you don't even have the courage to go after the terrorist yourself. You want to go into a third world nation, basically, Gaza, and you want to recruit this third world nation's poor people, civilians, to do your dirty work of snuffing out the terrorist. Man, this guy, Kid Rock. I don't know much about him, but it did remind me of the Green Day song. I don't want to be an American idiot. I think it's exactly who he had in mind, this kind of hillbilly attitude, but hillbilly tough guy attitude. But it's so not tough that it's basically beta behavior here. You don't even have the courage to fight your own wars. You want to take other people hostage and use their suffering to do your military operation. This is the opposite of a tough guy. It's a tough guy in the display. Tillerson says he's a homo. Is he? I don't know anything about him. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, you recently noted the closing of Best Buy stores. However, the real value of their stores is a level of guarantee that electronic hardware won't be tampered with compared to what you get through shipping and delivery. Absolutely brilliant. You are correct. You are correct that the fact that I can enter at a random Best Buy store and randomly pick up a computer means that I can't be targeted by certain psyops and hardware hacking hubs. And I do this very often. Very often I will go to a Best Buy and I will just pick up something and insist that I want to pick it up now. You know, not I give my name and you deliver. No. When I come in a Best Buy store, it's to pick up something and immediately bring it home. You are absolutely correct. One day with this whole Amazon, with this whole order from home movement, we will open ourselves to being politically targeted. And, you know, even if the CEO doesn't have bad intent, even if Jeff Bezos doesn't want to kill me, maybe at some point you're going to have CIA agents penetrating those industries and capable of saying, hey, this is the computer that's headed for Jean-François Gariepi. Let's put some child porn on it. I mean, this could be very grave. We had on the public space, I remember this guy who came on. We interviewed him. He was a U.S. Army guy who was found guilty, put in jail for having child porn on his laptop. And he was swearing to us here on this show that he hadn't done it, that this was put on there by someone. So yes, you might have like what if they do this and then they stay silent for 10 years and you live with that computer in your home for 10 years and then in 10 years they do an operation and they capture the computer. Wow, you would be in some trouble, man. That is it for tonight, boys. You did scare me with this super chat, but much love and I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you.